Let's do this. Woo! Ring the bell. This is Between the Ropes.
Oh, you're going for the dirt, for the behind-the-scenes stuff.
It's time to get Between the Ropes. Between the Ropes.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for joining in to the Between the Ropes podcast. I'm Brian Fritz, and joining me today, Kevin Eck. You can now find him on the X Factor blog. Just go to KevinEckWrestling.sportsblog.com. Former WWE creative team member and friend of the podcast here. So I'm assuming that on Tuesday night during the draft, you were watching this in the auspices of Mel Kiper Jr., kind of like with an NFL draft. Is that correct?
That would not be correct. In fact, I'd be honest with you, I didn't watch the draft live. I watched it, I DVR'd it and watched it after the Oriole game.
Wow, a stunning announcement.
I probably should have watched the draft because the Orioles lost. So.
Yeah, you probably should have then. But you know what? You got to skip through some stuff and everything. But I mean, you caught the gist of it. So, well, let's start right there then. Let's talk about the draft overall. So, when it was all said and done, how did you feel about the draft between the presentation and the way that it ended up with the rosters?
Well, I mean, as an episode, I thought it was better than some of the draft episodes in the past. I really liked. I think you and I talked about this in the past that we both wanted it to be like a sports presentation, like a real sports draft. And they did that pretty much for the most part.
Sure.
It wasn't, the picks weren't made at random or, you know, determined by like somebody winning a match. It was like it should be. It was two, authority figures, commissioners, general managers standing up at a podium and each making a pick based on who they thought would be the best available to help their brand. So I really liked that. And I thought WWE did a good job with their second screen experience and all that, you know, making it, you know, the draft central and making it, again, seem like a real event. The episode itself, like I said, better than past episodes. I like that they have the matches on there to sort of break up all the picks. I saw where some people said it would have been better if it was just a two-hour draft, you know, kind of like the NFL draft and other drafts that are televised. That we don't really need the matches, but I disagree with that. I think it really helps to have. I mean, it is a wrestling show after all, and I think you'd be asking a lot for wrestling fans to sit through a two-hour show with no matches whatsoever. Although the matches themselves, they really did come across as just filler, and you had matches that probably should have gone longer than 5 minutes, i.e., Cesaro and Jericho. That just seemed kind of shoehorned in there.
Yeah. Can you imagine though if they actually did it like the NFL or the NBA draft where they had like a lot of clips and they were breaking down like size, attributes, you know, positives, negatives, highlight reel, things like that, and somebody's like, this is why I want this guy.
They could do that, but I mean, don't you think, and maybe you don't agree with me, I don't know, but I just think when you're conditioned to seeing wrestling matches on a wrestling show, that the picks and a bunch of clips and I think you would be
it gets too much.
Bored or maybe a little disappointed, you know, that there's not some kind of action on there.
Right. I mean, bottom line is it's still an entertainment show. So it has to be treated a little bit differently than an NBA or an NFL draft because you have to be diehards to watch those. Those can be pretty dry. They're not that exciting. And you can pick elements from that, but you still have an obligation to do an entertainment show. And that's why you can't do it in a manner where there would have only been picks.
Right. And I do think, even though I just put over the fact that it came off like a real draft, it really isn't, right? There are differences. So, yeah, on the NFL draft, I can listen to the experts tell me between picks why this guy is going to fit into this system or whether it was a good pick or bad pick or whatever. But wrestling, at the end of the day, as we all know, is entertainment. And to have this breakdown of their skills and, you know, how fast they run a 40, I don't think that really would play on a wrestling show.
I'm sure the wrestlers would love that, too.
What's that?
I'm sure the wrestlers would love that, too.
I bet Show has a pretty good 40 at the time, huh, Big Show?
Who do you think is better, him or Kane?
Oof. It's got to be Kane. He's definitely more mobile than Big Show.
Yeah, maybe a little.
But to answer your other question, as far as the way the draft ended up, the rosters, it to me just seemed like same old story. I mean, Raw, part of it was the way it was set up, right? Raw got two or three picks to every two for SmackDown because they're a longer show, which I understand. But it just seemed to me when I look at the breakdown that Raw got the better end of the deal as usual. And I also thought that, you know, they're trying to paint SmackDown as the innovative, the fresh brand, because Shane McMahon's a forward thinker and Daniel Bryan and all that, man of the people. But to me, Raw really comes off as the more cutting edge or innovative show. I mean, you have John Cena and Randy Orton on SmackDown, The Miz, Dolph Ziggler, all these old guard kind of guys. But then you look at Raw, and of course they were the first ones to draft someone from NXT with Finn Balor. They have the top two women, Charlotte and Sasha Banks. They have the tag team champions in New Day. You know, Seth Rollins is their number one pick. They got Kevin Owens. They got Sami Zayn. They're going to have a cruiserweight division, which is going to be cool and innovative. So, you know, once again, to me, Raw looks like the more attractive of the two shows, and SmackDown basically is John Cena's show, and that's why they think people will watch.
Yeah, that was pretty surprising to me, too, that they did it like that, because the way that it all shaped out, too, I didn't feel like there was a major difference between the two brands. Like, tell me what is unique about Raw compared to SmackDown and vice versa that makes me want to say, you know what, I need to watch that show. Unless there's a particular star that I'm attracted to that I want to see, and they're not going to be on the entire show. But to me, it just felt like both of them came off the same way, to where there's no differentiating the two brands.
No, and I know you and I talked about that a few weeks back, last time I was on. It's like they really do need to be distinctive and have different styles. And, you know, would you have, I guess the cruiserweight division being on Raw will sort of play into that to some extent. But I know we talked about, are the women on one show and the, you know, tag teams on the other? Or, you know, is one sort of the wrestling show and one the entertainment show? But again, you're right. You look at the rosters, it's like, okay, here's Raw's the A show, SmackDown's the B show. It doesn't seem to be, again, other than the cruiserweights, doesn't seem to really be any differentiation. Now, we'll have to see. Will they get, I know there was a little shakeup with some of the announced teams, but are they going to get new sets? Are they going to, you know, are there going to be, is there anything from a stylistic standpoint that's going to be different between the two shows? And again, I think they need to look as different as possible, whether it's different camera angles, whether it's where you position the announcers. You know, anything you can do to make SmackDown look different than Raw and vice versa, I really think would benefit them. Otherwise, it's just the same old stuff. All they did was split the rosters in half. That's all they did, and add a cruiserweight division.
Yeah, I think SmackDown's going to have a new set, and I don't know if they're going to have new graphics or not, but I think they might. But, you know, it really made no sense to have the cruiserweight division on Raw. And I know that they've got that third hour. They've got to fill more time, but... You know, when you've got Daniel Bryan going out there on Raw after he is selected as the new GM, talking about, we're going to care more about the superstars, about the talent, about what we do in the ring, and we are going to be innovative. And then he doesn't have the cruiserweight division.
Right.
And he's got some of the talent that you talked about. You know, and the funny thing is, too, that, you know, when they did all these different interviews, like during SmackDown or even afterwards in the postgame show, Daniel Bryan was like the most engaged, the most intuitive guy, the most believable person on all of this, trying to explain it all. But it was still a tough sale because of like what you said, when you look at these rosters and the way that they kind of fit out. I was just surprised the way they did that. And they still have a lot of explaining to do. One of the biggest things is we still don't know what's going on with the world championships. We don't know if there's only going to be one world champion following Battleground, or one women's championship, or one tag team championship. Because if they add another one, okay, now you've got too many titles. If you keep him, but they can't switch brands, then you're talking about, I believe there's 6 tag teams on Raw, 5 on SmackDown, 7 women on Raw, 6 on SmackDown. So... are they going to do possibly the floating champion? I mean, there's a lot of things that have to be explained yet.
Well, certainly right now, the way it was presented was the champions are exclusive to their brand. You know, they came right out and said that. Dean Ambrose as WWE champion is SmackDown exclusive. And they said that with all the champions. Now, can that change? Yeah, I hope so. You know, I would love to see the WWE champion, the WWE women's champion, and the tag team champions go from show to show, and that would be great. You know, just keep the Intercontinental title specific to SmackDown and the U.S. title specific to Raw, and the three major champions going back and forth. Otherwise, if they either have to bring back more titles, which I think is a mistake, or what are the men on Raw that aren't competing for the Intercontinental or the U.S. title? I'm sorry, what are they competing for? If Dean Ambrose retains the title on Sunday and stays on SmackDown, what are Seth Rollins and Roman Reigns and all the guys over there, what are they fighting for? What are the tag teams on SmackDown fighting for when New Day isn't there? You know, it's just, it doesn't make any sense. What are the women on SmackDown fighting for? Charlotte and, or Sasha Banks or whoever has the title isn't on that show. It just doesn't make any sense. And my fear is they're going to add more titles, which I really think is a bad idea, because it just, it waters things down and it confuses things, and I think it takes away from the prestige of the championships.
And how about they bring up a tag team like American Alpha, which there's a lot of buzz around, and they're on the brand that in total there's only five tag teams. And it's nothing against anybody else, but you've got the Usos, you've got the Ascension, you've got Tyler Breeze and Fandango, and you've got the Vaudevillains. Like, okay, so you know, I mean, and then you look over on Raw, and that's the deeper group of tag teams. I mean, they've got the Club, they've got the Dudleys, they've got Enzo and Cass, they've got New Day. And now I'm sitting there going, man, I'm excited to see American Alpha get called up, but I'm not going to get to see the matchups that I want because the better tag teams are on the other brand.
Right, and when you look at the tag teams, as you said, Raw not only has more depth, but they got the three most over tag teams on the roster in New Day, Enzo and Cass, and Gallows and Anderson. They took the top three. Now, I guess you could look at it, you know, glass half full. American Alpha is probably going to be the centerpiece of the tag team division on SmackDown. I'm looking at, you know, who the the Usos are very talented, but, I mean, I think they're pretty stale right now. And the other three tag teams just aren't over. I mean, the Ascension, Breeze and Fandango, Vaudevillains, not over at all. So American Alpha doesn't really have a lot of competition. But again, if they're not fighting for titles, I don't really know what they're fighting for. So
yeah,
and definitely things that have to be addressed. But, you know, going back to something you said earlier about Daniel Bryan, it just seemed like such a no-brainer, to your point, that the cruiserweight division would be on the show with Bryan, who is doing the commentary for the Cruiserweight Classic, and is talking about, you know, him and Shane both about being innovators and fresh thinking, you know, when it comes to SmackDown. Yet Stephanie McMahon is going to get the credit. I mean, I know it's a work, but storyline-wise, she gets the credit for bringing back the Cruiserweight division, just like she took the credit for the Divas Revolution, or the, whatever they're calling it, the Women's Revolution, I guess. So it's just, the whole thing's very bizarre. Like, I understand why certain decisions were made from a business standpoint, behind the scenes, but from a storyline standpoint, some of those picks, some of those decisions made absolutely no sense based on who the personalities were doing the drafting.
Well, it's all because Stephanie has lady balls.
That's right, lady balls. You know what, as you mentioned that, I've been fascinated by the interplay between her and Shane on TV, because it really seems like a lot of stuff's off the cuff, and it seems like they're shooting on each other. Stephanie talking about him sweating bullets, and every time he stumbles over his words, which he's actually been doing a lot since he came back, she's right there quick to point it out. He got in the zinger about you're only relevant because you married a WWE superstar. It came off to me like all those things were unscripted and set off the cuff. And anytime Shane stumbles or does anything that Stephanie can jump on, she does it. So it's very interesting to watch all that play out.
That segment that opened up Raw on Monday was one of the weirder ones I've seen in a while, because it felt like you said, those two in particular were going off the cuff. Stephanie, I think, I don't know if she got lost or where she was going a couple times, which is, you know, that just doesn't happen for her. At one point, Foley got lost to where he literally had to walk over to Stephanie, and they had to whisper to each other, like, what am I supposed to say here?
It wasn't very subtle. She very clearly was giving him his lines.
Oh, yeah. It was so strange. And it was just like, what just happened with this segment? I mean, I can't remember the last time that I've seen a segment really go off the rails like that.
Yeah, it was bizarre. And I think a lot of their real-life rivalry, or whatever you want to call it, sibling rivalry, you know, whatever, there's been bad heart, you know, bad blood over the year, whatever it is. And it seems like some of that is playing out, almost like a worked shoot, you know, like we're seeing it, the McMahon family therapy session playing out on TV. But just why is Shane sweating bullets like that? I mean, what's going on there?
I think that he's just a heavy sweater, and he's got all those lights and everything, and he's probably a little bit nervous. But, hey, you know, hey, there's people that sweat a lot. I mean, you know, as a basketball fan, I mean, Patrick Ewing is one of the all-time greatest sweaters in the world.
Well, that's true. Wouldn't you admit, though, that Shane, I'm not trying to pick on Shane here, but, I mean, doesn't it seem like he's just nowhere near the performer he was before he left?
I agree with that.
Very, seems very unsure of himself and tentative out there.
Yeah, and I think he could still have it. It's just for whatever reason. I think a lot of it is like, okay, just make sure you hit on this, this, and this, and go. And just, I don't know what's going on behind the scenes, but for whatever reason, it just doesn't feel like he's as prepared or there's as much stuff that's for him. It's just like, okay, just go out there and go with it and make sure you hit these bullet points. And, you know, it's one of those things where if you don't have your reps, you can be off your game. And the second that you do something wrong, that's when you get nervous, and that's when things really start getting unhinged, and you're trying to tie it all back together, and, you know, we see segments like we saw Monday.
And the person you're playing off of isn't necessarily helping you.
No,
it's jumping on every mistake that you make.
Absolutely. You know, it's just like, it's like these gotcha moments, you know? And you know, the reason why SmackDown is being moved live and they're doing this draft is because they said they want to, you know, we know USA Network wants them to increase the ratings. So these shows need to be on the same kind of level. But there they were once again, you know, during the broadcast. And I know she's in character, and I brought this up before, but Stephanie is pointing out every time she's starting a new round about how Raw's the flagship and the other one's the B show. And there was so much of that going on between her and like the second screen experience. Booker T made a comment to John Cena about, you know, is this a demotion going to SmackDown? And it was kind of an overriding theme. And it's just like, why are you guys still pointing this out? You know, that shouldn't we be beyond this? But apparently not.
It's so silly and counterproductive. And I just think people are kind of sick of that. Like, nobody buys it. Okay. At this, we all know that both shows are under the WWE umbrella. Stephanie McMahon is promoted as and is one of the principal owners of WWE. Why would she only want one show to succeed? Why would she be rooting for SmackDown to fail? Because that would hurt her business. It would hurt her financially. It doesn't make any sense. We know it's not real competition. And I don't know if you caught Cesaro's promo.
I was going to bring that up. It was amazing.
But, I mean, you know, truer words were never spoken when he said, no one cares about it. The focus should be on the superstars. No one cares about the feuding authority figures. And I really do. I think it's just played out. And, you know, how smart is it to be asking fans basically to choose between the show on Monday and the show on Tuesday? It just doesn't do – it's just so counterproductive, like I said, for the shows to be running each other down. It's just silly. You know, they did that back with the original brand split, and eventually they abandoned it because I think they realized that this is just stupid. You know, why would we're all under the same umbrella? Why would we be denigrating our own product? I mean, I remember years back when Michael Cole was a SmackDown announcer. It was going back to 2002 when they did the split, and somebody brought up something on Raw. I clearly remember him saying, "Raw, I don't watch Raw. I'm a SmackDown guy." I'm like, okay. I mean, that's just absurd.
Well, Cesaro did have the line of the night when he talked about that, and it was so funny watching JoJo ask him, like, so, how do you think that Stephanie McMahon and Mick Foley can coexist? And he is looking and is like, I don't care. And just let loose this truly honest promo that was fantastic about, I want this to be about the talent, about the stars. Look at the guys that we have. We've got Finn Balor, and we've got the New Day, and we've got Seth Rollins. We've got so much talent. Oh, and by the way, I can actually cut a promo too. I can talk because I have a brain that has thoughts that come out of my mouth in words. And he even admitted, like, I know I'm not the best promo in the world. Sometimes I stumble, but you know what? I do my talking in the ring with my wrestling. Yeah. And it was so fantastic to see something like that. So, well, let me ask you this about him, and now I'll go back to another point that you made. So, because originally this was something WWE did not highlight, but since it got so much attention, of course they jumped on it. They put that video of Cesaro on their YouTube channel, and they actually put it front and center on their website too. So they were promoting it, like, oh, look at what Cesaro is doing, you know? Do you think that there will be any kind of repercussions for what he said?
Well, I've thought about this, and when I watched it, you know, I know it was done live, and I don't think he had a lot of time, you know. Well, here's what I'm hoping. I'm hoping that the creative team said, hey, here's a storyline for Cesaro. Let's make, you know, we'll have him drafted lower than he probably should go, and he'll go to Raw, and this will be a storyline with him, you know, basically saying what a lot of the fans are thinking or what we see on social media. He'll kind of be the voice of that, and we'll make a storyline out of it. I'm hoping that was thought of ahead of time.
I don't think so.
That he was directed. I'm not sure either, but that's my hope for his own good, just in case there could be repercussions. But I give him credit. If he really said that off the cuff without fear of repercussions, then, you know, God bless Cesaro, because he does have some balls, for sure.
Absolutely, you know? Man.
I really hope that, if it wasn't planned, that WWE will seize the opportunity to make it a storyline. I would hate to see him be penalized for it because, look, I know people can fall in love with certain guys that they want to get a push, and they feel like they're underused, and a lot of times it's the internet wrestling community wants guys to be pushed that, you know, maybe aren't necessarily going to become big stars. But I think Cesaro is one of those guys that truly is underutilized, that if he was given, you know, he's had moments where it looks like, oh, okay, this is going to be the starting point for a push, and he gets to a certain level, and then he stops. And then it's a start and stop with him. I would love to see them give him a real opportunity, a real push. You know, have him win a number one contenders match for a world title match and let him headline a pay-per-view against whoever the champion is. Let him cut promos to build up a main event. What would it hurt? Let's see. You know, at the best, you've got another guy at the top of the card that could potentially make you money, and that's in the mix. If it doesn't work, okay, well, then keep him slotted where he's at, but at least you would have tried it. You never know until you do it.
I totally agree with you because, you know, you've got to give these guys opportunities. That's one of the biggest things that I always say about some of these talents is we don't know what they have in some of these guys, you know, because they haven't been given, you know, an opportunity, especially when it comes to promos and getting a little bit more of a push. See what happens. The worst thing that happens is you backtrack off of it, but you got to give some [S2] Right. [S1] Of these people some opportunities. You know, when it came to the broadcast, and I know that a lot of this was just kind of on the fly, the way that they were doing it. But at the same time, there has to be some kind of preparation, and you're hoping that the people involved are kind of keeping a closer eye on what is going on with the draft and things to ask and stuff. The second screen experience at the post show just seemed all over the place with awkward questions and different things. And some of it's Booker T, and I like Booker T. He's a good dude, but he's asking John Cena if it's a demotion to go to SmackDown. Then he asked a super awkward question where he even had to have his hand over his face, basically. He's asking the Usos about, what do you think about Roman Reigns, your cousin, since fans hate his guts? Then you had the awkward moment of Cesaro. You had one with Alberto Del Rio where you could tell that he was crushed going to SmackDown, and Paige is on Raw. There was a lot of things that were just kind of really, really strange that they did on this show.
Well, I wouldn't, you know, Vince McMahon likes to screw with people, you know, for sure. And I don't know if that had anything to do with any of those circumstances or incidents that you brought up, whether he just, you know, he likes to screw with people on live TV. That's just a thing. I'll be honest, I didn't watch a lot of the second screen stuff because it just was, what I saw wasn't good. And I thought, you know what, I'll get the picks later.
Yeah.
Because it really was hard to watch.
I watched the post show. The second screen experience stuff I found out after the fact, or I kind of found on Twitter. But yeah, it was just some, it's funny because normally everything is kind of so organized, like here, and you don't see much off the cuff stuff. And I like it because we're getting some honesty and you're getting some of these real moments. But it just felt so weird to see so much of that going on that thing. You know, when you were talking about, you know, the brand split before, and just kind of the way that this all went down, I'm almost kind of wondering, because we're talking about, you know, Raw and SmackDown need to be on the same level, how they treat them and everything. Do you really think that they needed to do a brand split here when it comes to trying to get the ratings for SmackDown, you know, increased?
No, I'm not in favor of the brand split. I don't see how it benefits either show to split the rosters in half. To me, if you want SmackDown to do a nice number on Tuesday nights on USA Network, you have the full roster. You know, you don't just have John Cena. You have Seth Rollins. You have Roman Reigns. You have everybody that's on the Raw roster right now that can appear on SmackDown going forward. I don't think WWE has enough depth and enough star power to split the rosters. And I don't think it's a good thing.
You know, at first I thought, you know, it was fine, but when you really get down to it, and after they do it and you see the rosters, then I agree with you that you get to that point, because what it does now too is, I know what the argument will be. There are certain matchups, certain feuds that we want to see, and now they're prohibitive. And they'll say, well, they could happen down the line. There could be a trade. There could be another draft or whatever scenario. But it really limits it right now. And you never know what's going to happen when it comes to injuries or who gets hot or different things like that. If they wanted to make the shows different because there is a cruiserweight division on one, or, you know, one is presented in a different way than the other, just with the look and the feel and camera angles and all that, those different things, then that's fine. But I really think that they could be hurting themselves in this position by doing it this way. Now, who knows? I mean, we got to see how it all shapes out, because I assume they're going to be adding some more people. There's already been some talk that they're going to add some more, you know, past stars that they've had. And then, you know, when it comes to NXT, who knows? Maybe they're going to be adding some more talent here within the next month or two.
Well, I think they're going to need to do something. I mean, especially if you look at that SmackDown roster, and like, I don't want to jinx anybody. I'm certainly not wishing injury on anyone. But Randy Orton has a history of injuries.
Yeah.
Bray Wyatt's had his share of injuries. If you were to take those two guys off the SmackDown roster, you look at, you got Ambrose and Styles and Cena at the top of the card, and then you immediately drop down to, you know, no disrespect, but now you're down to your Miz-type guys, Dolph Ziggler.
Baron Corbin's the
Kane.
World champion, man.
What's that?
I said Baron Corbin's your world champion, maybe.
Baron Corbin, who I think has a lot of upside, but he's not quite, you know, not quite ready yet. But
look at guys like
there's no margin for error for SmackDown right now. When it comes to injuries.
Well, look at guys like Dolph Ziggler and Alberto Del Rio, who I think are both very talented, but they haven't been anywhere near the main event picture, especially Ziggler. And now they might be in a position, even with the way that the roster shaped out, that those guys are probably going to have to get bigger pushes.
There's no way around it.
it's just very, I don't know. I was just befuddled by the whole thing, and I don't get angry about it, but I was just really disappointed, because I thought there was a lot of possibilities, a lot of potential that they could have done, the way these rosters could have come off. And I was just scratching my head by the end of the night, you know, when the way that they did everything. And I mean, I'll be fair. Let's see what happens. I mean, hey, you know what? Maybe everybody will stay healthy, and maybe this is a great opportunity now for Bray Wyatt, because he's got to be spotlighted more. And same with Becky Lynch. Even though there's not much depth on that roster, Becky Lynch is going to be the female star of SmackDown. And same with American Alpha. It's just, we got to find some opponents for them on SmackDown. And then over on Raw, who knows, you know, who might get spotlighted a little bit more, you know? And
yeah, there's some silver linings there for sure. I mean, with people you mentioned, Baron Corbin, absolutely, I think, is going to get a chance to shine on SmackDown, where if he was on the Raw roster right now, he would be so lost in the shuffle with all the talent that's there. You know, Natalya, not just Becky Lynch, but Natalya and Naomi, I think it's great for them that they're going to be on the SmackDown roster. Although I think Daniel Bryan lost a little bit of credibility when he said Becky Lynch was the best female on the roster. As long as Charlotte and Sasha Banks are around, I don't think you can say that with a straight face. And the crowd didn't really react to it. But yeah, American Alpha is another one. There are certainly going to be opportunities there for people to step up, but I think the perception will just continue that SmackDown is the B show. The best thing they have going for them is that John Cena's on the roster. And could you imagine if Cena wasn't drafted to SmackDown? How, you know, if it would have been Roman Reigns instead? You know, it really would have been, you know, it would have been screaming the B show. But, you know, I mentioned Cena. I'll give Cena a lot of credit. He really does. I don't know if he had to be talked into this or if he's fine with it or whatever, but I just, the fact that he did it, you know, I think is great. Like, he will do whatever is literally, you know, the cliche, what's best for business.
Right.
You need him to be on SmackDown to give it a boost, he'll do it. You know, he'll work with any young talent. He'll give a rub to Enzo and Cass. He'll, you know, wrestle Styles and Owens and all those guys on pay-per-view. Like, John Cena is such a valuable guy to the company and always seems to be willing to put the company first.
Well,
so
thank
God that he is on SmackDown.
Well, here's another thing that I wonder about, and this involves Cena. So what happens when you want to go to, you know, SmackDown comes to town for a house show? There's no John Cena. He's not doing house shows coming up here, or he's going to be doing, there be few and far between. So if we think the roster is a little bit thin right now in that SmackDown brand, what's it going to be like when they come to your town and there's no John Cena?
Well, it's going to be on guys like Dean Ambrose, you know, and AJ Styles are going to have to be, and I guess Randy Orton to some extent. Those are the guys that are going to have, they're going to be in those slots.
Yeah.
And they're going to be counted on. You know, they're going to be put in positions where they have to be the top draw.
So there's a lot made about the NXT call-ups that happened. So obviously, we didn't see some of the top stars when it came to Samoa Joe and Shinsuke Nakamura, Bayley, Asuka, and some others. And instead, we saw Carmella, we saw Alexa Bliss, we did see Finn Balor, American Alpha, Mojo Rawley got called up, and Nia Jax got called up as well. I think that, to me, the biggest thing that stands out about that is it's not the fact that they didn't get drafted. It's the fact that WWE did not explain why they weren't drafted, like saying something along the lines of they were not eligible for whatever reason. That's the thing I want to ask you about then when it comes to that is the details in this, because to me, you can come up with a reason. It might be far-fetched, but at least you're giving a reason. You're being detailed about it. So when you were there, how detail-oriented were things like this, or was it something that got brought up and just kind of got overlooked?
I mean, it's a broad question, and it's a case-by-case basis. I will say that.
Sure.
There were sometimes Vince would be a stickler for details. I'm a very detail-oriented guy. I hate to, especially when it came to storylines, I don't like any loose ends. I don't like anything where a fan could basically ask the questions like we do. Like, man, why didn't they address that? Or I always wanted to do that. And sometimes Vince was all over that as well. And, you know, he would be the one to bring it up. Other times it would just be dismissed. Ah, we're not going to go there. Nobody remembers that. You know, even when I was there, the anonymous Raw general manager was still being talked about. And there were various times somebody on the writing team would say, hey, a situation presented itself. Maybe we can actually, you know, sort of tie in the anonymous Raw GM. Vince would say, nah, nobody cares about that anymore. You know, that people have forgotten about that. And I was like, well, I don't think they have. You know, it's a big loose end that was never tied up. So the detail-oriented question, it's like, yeah, sometimes it's stressed and it's very important. And other times there are things that just get glossed over because they don't think it's a major concern to the audience. And, you know, well, the audience is going to watch anyway, so it's not like they're going to stop watching because certain details weren't, you know, everything wasn't made crystal clear. The thing with the NXT people, you know, I think, you know, you and I talked about this just amongst ourselves before that, yeah, I'm not surprised Nakamura didn't get called up, nor Samoa Joe, who is the NXT champion. You know, NXT is a separate entity. It's its own touring brand, and they need top stars as well. And I didn't think they were going to lose those two guys. However, you're right. It looks very strange that Nia Jax and Alexa Bliss are getting called up to the main roster, but Nakamura and Samoa Joe and Bayley are not. It makes the people doing the drafting for Raw and SmackDown look kind of silly that they would overlook them.
Well, how about, you know, when
does it surprise me that they, does it surprise me that that wasn't explained? No, but it, I mean, it could easily be explained that, you know, the William Regal was allowed to put a tag on certain guys and say they were girls and say they weren't eligible, or, you know, takeovers coming up and they needed certain talents there. Samoa Joe was the NXT champion, wasn't eligible. Whatever. I mean, there are all kinds of ways where you could just very easily and quickly say, here's the reason why. But it does not surprise me that Vince would. And you know what? I'll be willing to bet you anything. Someone has raised that point, and Vince probably just said, you know, we're just not going to address it.
Yeah, but it's funny that they wanted to treat the draft like it was a real thing, kind of like a sport. But then at the same time, and it's nothing against the guy, but you can't explain to me, you know what? I got to have Mojo Rawley on my squad, but not the NXT champion.
Right. It's a huge logic gap. There's no question about it. It really is.
Yeah.
But, you know, like I said, sometimes details are important. Sometimes they're not. And who knows? Maybe it'll still be, it could possibly still be explained, you know, this week or Raw or SmackDown. Somebody could bring it up. But my guess is probably not.
If it ever gets explained, it will get explained on NXT.
Right, which the majority of the audience won't see it.
Right. That's how they'll get around that. Who knows? You know, and the problem that I have, I guess, with the whole thing, when it comes to the NXT talent, and I didn't expect those guys to go up right now either, but I know that NXT is a touring brand, and it's become, you know, what it's become. It's become a big deal. But at the same time, you make your money in that company off the guys that are on the main roster, and you've got some special talents that can really do some business on the main roster, I think, and they're in the prime of their career. Why would you squander that opportunity to keep them on NXT when NXT, it's a touring brand, it's become a big deal, but what do? 2, 3, maybe 4 big shows a year when it comes to bigger buildings? And, you know, when you talk about the TV tapings and people going to Full Sail, or even with some of the shows that aren't at VFW halls or whatnot, it's 1,000 to 2,000 people. They're going to reload and restock. And I still think that they would do perfectly fine with that. And they're still going to have some guys that have some name appeal, but I just think they're missing out when it comes to some of these guys that they're, I mean, you're talking about Joe, and Joe's already what? 36, 37, Nakamura's in his mid-30s. I mean, they had Balor down there for over 2 years, and he's in his mid-30s. It's like, if these guys are ready, you got to bring them up.
I see your point, but, I mean, just think about it. If they were to lose Balor and Nakamura and Joe, I mean, yes, there's still some talent there, but that's a pretty significant. I mean, to lose those three all at once.
Well, that's the thing. You can't lose them all at once. I think you've got to separate it out, and that's why maybe Balor should have already been up. You know, and you can spread them out. I'm not saying, you know, just it's, you know, you lose everybody at one time, but it's just kind of weird the way that they've done this.
I think Nakamura is I think he's going to be there. You know, I don't want to say sooner than later, because I think he is so valuable to the NXT brand that he should be there for a little while longer, at least. But I think he'll get his shot on the main roster, and, you know, I don't think they're going to keep him. At least, hopefully not, keep him in NXT for years, because you're right, he's not 25 years old. Samoa Joe, I mean, I know we might differ a little bit on this. I've always seen Joe as kind of a guy who could be a headliner in a smaller company. I never saw him as a big WWE superstar. I think he's in the perfect spot as the NXT champion, and I think he does a great job in that role. I think it's perfectly suited for him. People who are very into NXT and you know, probably the same people that love Ring of Honor and other promotions like that, I think that's their guy. And I think he's the perfect guy to put that title on and have headline your shows. I don't think he's anywhere near as valuable to WWE on the main roster.
Well, I can see that with Joe. I would like to see Joe on the main roster. And I differ with you from that standpoint, but I could see if they said, we're going to keep you at NXT because you're that valuable to that brand, and just kind of whatever deal that they've made with him. Remember, he's got a deal to where he doesn't work other independents. He's exclusive to them. but he doesn't go and train on a daily basis at the performance center like everybody else. I mean, everybody else, if you have a full-time deal, you're there training every day, or you have a deal to where you work NXT shows and then you can work the independents. So Joe's got a very, very unique deal. So if they want to keep him there, I can understand that. I almost get the feeling, though, even though we can complain, or I am and some other people are complaining why these guys didn't get called up right now, but especially when it comes to the case of, say, Nakamura and Bailey, I could easily see where both of them could be called up like right after SummerSlam.
I'll tell you what. I really thought Bailey was going to be involved in this draft. I thought, and again, I know she's as valuable, you know, as some of these other people that we've mentioned to the NXT brand. But I just felt like her time, she had done her time, kind of like Balor. You know, she put in the time. She's as over as anybody there. And, you know, I think she's just a superstar waiting to happen on the main roster. I really thought, you know, Balor and Bailey were no-brainers as far as going in the draft. I would have bet anything on it. And I don't know what that means exactly for Bailey, whether they're looking at her as, you know, sort of like Joe and Nakamura, like they're very valuable and they need her at NXT, or if, you know, it's something else. I don't know, but that really did stun me.
She's been abundantly clear, like, it is time for me to leave NXT and go to the main roster. So I don't know how she felt about it, but I'm sure she's been disappointed that it hasn't happened yet. Who knows? Maybe there's a plan in place. I mean, everybody wonders, you know, with Battleground, we've got this mystery partner for Sasha Banks. I don't know if it's going to be her or not. It could be, and maybe that's why she didn't get drafted. But at the same time, I'm not expecting it to be her. Are you?
Well, I wouldn't say expecting, but when that angle was first shot and Banks was going to need a mystery partner, Bailey was the first person I thought of. And I thought, well, that's got to be what it is. Who else could it be?
Yeah.
And now, Banks, you know, you never know when people are trying to work fans or whatever, but Sasha went on social media and said, because she's been hearing all the rumors about Bailey, and she said, it's definitely not Bailey. You know, she sort of said this in character that,
yeah,
I don't like Bailey. I don't want to team with her. Stop tweeting me about it. Now, was that a response? Was that the old Chris Jericho response of lying to everyone? You know, I'm not going to be there, and then she's there. I don't know. I think if it's not her, it might be Nikki Bella, perhaps, coming back earlier than expected from her neck injury. I don't know.
Yeah.
There's a legend, you know. Is it Trish Stratus or Lita or... you know, I would love to see it be someone like Naomi, who that'd be a big way to bring her back to the roster. And she has a history with Sasha. But my feeling is that would be seen as a disappointment. Nothing against Naomi, but I think the fans would gonna be like, ugh, you know, especially because I think they're really expecting Bailey.
Well, yeah, there's a pocket of fans that are expecting Bailey. And no matter who it is, if it's not her, they're going to be disappointed. And when it comes to Nikki, I mean, it could be. I mean, she's putting out this social media now that she's at the Performance Center training and she's been cleared. And I kind of wonder if she was already cleared a week or two ago. And this has all kind of been kept down.
I mean, there have been rumors that she's already been training for her comeback. And, you know, yeah, is this another red herring? You know, hey, I'm at the Performance Center, just got cleared to train again.
Right.
Well, how do we know that's true? She could have been training for weeks, so.
Yeah.
The build. Anytime you build up a mystery partner thing, like, you got to, WWE, well, any wrestling promotion, they don't always deliver, but because, you know, the fans, they start thinking all these scenarios and all these people who it could be, so you really want to deliver with something that, you know, doesn't just deflate everyone. And I think everyone wants to see Bailey. I think Nikki, you know, she is a star. I know some people don't like her, but the Bellas definitely have their fans.
Yeah.
And I think Nikki did gain a lot of the fans' respect. Her work got a lot better. I think people know her story with the neck injury. So I don't think people will hate it if it's Nikki. But if it isn't those two, or like I said, a big name like a Trish or a Lita, I don't know who else it could be that wouldn't be a letdown.
You were at WWE at the time that the brand split basically went bye-bye. So what was the experience like when you got there from that standpoint of it was still going on, but I guess it was in its dying days?
was like hanging by a thread. You know, there was definitely a Raw roster and a SmackDown roster that we had to adhere to. But the concern, there was big concern over USA Network was concerned that the Raw ratings were dipping a little bit and that maybe the show needed more star power. So if you'll recall, that's when we started doing the Raw Super Shows, which meant that basically the whole SmackDown roster was going to be on Raw. So the roster was put back together, but for Raw only. SmackDown still had the SmackDown exclusive roster. And, you know, we would try to, sometimes for storyline reasons, we would need someone from Raw to show up on SmackDown. And, you know, we would sometimes come up with some thin reason as to why they were there. But then after a while, we, you know, it was just Brian Gewirtz, who was running the writing team at that time, was saying, we don't even need to explain at this point. I don't think anyone even thinks that there's a brand split anymore. So it just kind of quietly went away and was never really acknowledged anymore, even though you still had guys that were pretty much SmackDown exclusive. You never really it was never really brought up, and then it just went away.
And that's the way that a lot of things go away in a lot of companies. It's just like, all right, sooner or later, they just kind of fade off into the background.
Yeah, I mean, eventually, the bigger stars always wanted to be on Raw. So what you eventually had was, you know, John Cena didn't do SmackDown. CM Punk stopped showing up for SmackDown. Randy Orton, a guy who has been around, you know, for a long time, saw all that and said, hey, man, I don't want to go to SmackDown either. So Randy stopped going to SmackDown, and you know, that's just kind of the way it was.
You know, when it came to Raw as well, so at the end of the show, they did this quasi-cliffhanger for the World Championship where it ended up being a double pin. At first, you thought that the championship had changed hands. They did not alert anybody to watch the WWE Network on the broadcast, but if you had the app or if you were following along on Twitter, you found out that the show continued on the network, and then it was later explained that it was a double pin, it was a draw, Ambrose retained. So I kind of thought that they were going to do this cliffhanger to where maybe it was going to lead to SmackDown. And cliffhangers have been a big part of the wrestling business over the years, but not as much now necessarily, but in the past they were. What was it like for you when you were there too, when it came to, you know, this sense of cliffhangers and trying to keep people engaged to make sure they came back, you know, whether it was from Raw to SmackDown or from Raw one week to Raw the following week or whatever it was?
Well, I mean, there was always the notion of, you know, wanting to end with people wanting more, so that you would, you know, it is episodic television. So we did want, you know, you to end the show and think, oh, my God, I can't wait to watch next week or see what happens on SmackDown. A lot of times, as I'm sure you've noticed, SmackDown was just kind of a holding pattern show to get you to the next Monday. It was really Monday to Monday when big things happened. And SmackDown, for the most part, was just kind of treading water till you got to the next Raw. But, I mean, there was always a, you know, I don't know if we always called them cliffhangers, but you certainly wanted shows to end on a note where you felt like you wanted to, you were enticed to tune in to see what happened next. As far as this one that they did on Monday, I thought it came off really just kind of awkward. The way, like, the confusion right after the double pin was made, I thought the referee looked really silly because he just kind of sat there. You know, I know he took a bump and I guess he was supposed to be groggy, but he was had his senses enough to make the three count. And then he just kind of sat there instead of going over to Lillian Garcia and explaining what just happened.
I didn't understand the ref bump. I was like, why?
What's that?
I didn't really understand the ref bump other than I guess he was so groggy he could make a three count, but he couldn't explain himself for another few minutes until they got to the network.
Right. I think that was sort of the idea, but again, I think it came off really clunky and executed. Like, the referee just didn't look like he was incapacitated to the point where he couldn't say, oh, yeah, both guys' shoulders were on the mat, you know, Dean's still the champion, or I need to look at a replay or something. It just seemed a little unrealistic that all this confusion was going on around him, and it was actually kind of just funny the way he just sort of sat there and let it go on. But, you know, to do that angle and then come, I think we all kind of had the knee-jerk reaction that, okay, this is going to lead to two titles now. I think we all sort of expected some kind of disputed finish in that match to lead to potentially two titles. But then they came back the next night on SmackDown, and you know, Dean went over clean, 1-2-3 in the middle of the ring. So unless they're going to call back to this thing at some point, I don't think it was that great of a cliffhanger angle that you really wanted to see SmackDown the next night to see what happened. You didn't even know, like you said, they didn't alert anybody to see the resolution on the network. So it was just very awkwardly handled. And getting back to that for a second, I think there could have been issues with the USA Network as to, I don't know that they would necessarily think it's a great thing to say, hey, if you want to see the end of the show, you won't see it here on USA Network. Go to the WWE Network.
Sure.
That may have been one of the reasons why, or the main reason why, Michael Cole didn't direct people to go do that. So, and that's one thing to say, hey, we've got a podcast coming up on the USA Network. It's another thing to say, hey, the resolution to this match that you've just watched and this 3.5-hour show that you just sat through won't be here. It'll be on the network.
Yeah. Well, you talked about SmackDown kind of being this holding pattern show. Was there ever a push by yourself or anybody on the creative team at that time to say, why aren't we doing more with this brand and can we?
Well, you know, I took it sort of personally because for a while I was the sort of the head writer of the home team version of the writing team. The real head writer, who the person everyone looked to as the head writer, went on the road, and at the time it was Ryan Ward, and I was sort of the head writer of the home team, kind of the point guy who sort of got the discussion rolling. And look, I always aimed high. I always looked at it because I thought that's, you know, that was our job and that's what they were paying us for, is if you're going to put me in charge to some extent of SmackDown, I want to make it the best show possible. And I want to, you know, I want to have the best matchups possible. And from time to time, you know, it would come up where Vince would say, you know, that's really good or that's a big match. Let's save it for Raw. That absolutely happened on occasion. But there were other times when Vince would say, SmackDown's important, and, you know, we don't want to, you know, make it lesser than. So, you know, we could do this big thing on SmackDown. So it really, again, like everything there, was kind of a case-by-case basis and what Vince was feeling on that particular week or with that particular storyline. But I know amongst the people that worked on SmackDown, and, you know, we all worked on both shows, but I think the people that were more in charge of putting the show together, sort of the point people like I was, yeah, we absolutely wanted SmackDown to be great.
So what do you think is going to happen with the World Championship on Sunday at Battleground? Do you think that they will do something off of that to create where they can easily create a second championship?
I think they could. I really didn't expect such a clean finish, I'll tell you, on SmackDown. I really thought once they announced the rematch, it was going to be some other disputed finish that you could then
double DQ, something like that, yeah.
Yeah, that you could then have Ambrose or Reigns go over at Battleground, but over each other. You know, either Ambrose would pin Reigns or Reigns would pin Ambrose. And then Seth Rollins could come back on Monday and say, you know, Dean Ambrose didn't beat me on Raw. It was, you know, I should have won. The camera angles still don't ever show that legitimately that my shoulders were down. And then I didn't lose at Battleground. So in my mind, I'm, you know, what a heel would say, I'm the rightful champion, and then have Stephanie crown him as the world heavyweight champion or whatever. And then you have Seth on Raw as the champ, and you have either Dean or Roman on SmackDown. That's not going to happen now, obviously, because, well, for one thing, Reigns is on Raw. So that's not going to happen. I still do think there could be room for something like that to happen, where Seth could, I guess as a heel, he could, you know, he could say, well, you know, the rematch on SmackDown should have never happened anyway, because I legitimately won on Raw. You know, I guess they could do something like that. But, you know, I would love to believe that they're not going to do the two titles thing, but they probably are.
Yeah, I kind of have this feeling that they're going to do something along the lines of Ambrose leaves as champion, but Reigns and Rollins can kind of each make a claim to it, and they will face each other at SummerSlam for the newly created World Heavyweight Championship.
Yeah, I could certainly see something like that happening, for sure. I think we're fighting up. You know, we're fighting a losing battle here. I think that's where things are headed. And you know, I don't think it's a coincidence that all of a sudden the WWE World Heavyweight Championship started being called the WWE Championship.
Right.
No explanation. Just one of those things. They just started doing it.
You know, and it's funny because we talk about all of this when it comes to the draft and everything else, and it's fine. It's what we do. We all play armchair quarterback, and we all get bent out of shape when things don't go the way that we like it. But I want to see how it plays out now. I guess now it's kind of like, all right, I've said, you know, what I was going to say. I spoke my piece. Let me sit back and let me see what happens, and then I can fairly critique it again if it's something that I don't think is working or whatever. But just on the face of it right now, I hope I have egg on my face, because on the face of it, I think, man, there's going to have to be some big adjustments, like some kind of big trade or something is going to have to happen right now, just in the way that they've organized all this or not. And hey, you know what? That's happened plenty of times before, because we sit there and we have a knee-jerk reaction and then we see how it plays out. I mean, a lot of times, though, it happens with characters. And, you know, the latest example for myself probably would be the New Day, which I thought was a dumb gimmick. And then those three guys made it work, which, you know, but I don't know about this one. I guess how long do you think it would be before we can really evaluate whether or not this is working? Do you think 3 months or all the way to WrestleMania or when?
Well, I mean, personally, I'm gonna give it a few months and see how it plays out. And I agree with you. I want it to be great. You know, especially
I did too.
As a viewer. I mean, I want it to be awesome. You know, I don't want to watch a show that I think could be better or that isn't as good as it could be. Or,
you have the logo of SmackDown Great Again, I'm sure.
Yeah. But, you know, we get, this is what we do, right? As wrestling pundits or whatever, we have to analyze, and this is what we see and what we think. But that doesn't mean we're right. It doesn't mean that they can't adjust it or that it's going to be way better than we expect it to be. I hope it is. But from the moment that it was announced that there was a brand split, I had my concerns about it. And what I saw this week has done nothing to make me not concerned. So, yeah, I hope something happens. I hope it's better than I expect. Maybe it'll be great to have two world champions. I don't know. Just hearing about it, visualizing it, seeing how it was in the past, I just don't think it's a great idea.
I just think they have a lot of explaining to do when it comes to these loose ends. And then we'll go from there. Hopefully they can tie it in together, and hopefully they at least give an explanation. I'd rather have something that was a dumb explanation in my eyes than nothing at all. And just kind of left going, what, you know, why did that not happen? I think we all fully expect there's going to be some other talents brought back. Is there anybody in particular that you're hoping to see back in WWE?
Yeah. I keep thinking Kurt Angle's going to show up. You know, I thought he was going to be one of the general managers, and, obviously, there's been so many rumors about Kurt coming back over the years. He's the first guy that comes to mind when I think of a guy I like to see back in the company.
I still think we're a few months off before Angle, though.
What's that?
I think we're a few months off before we see Angle. I could see him like around early next year.
Yeah, it could happen at any point, really. I mean, you hear the Hardy's names mentioned all the time, but something tells me they're sticking around in TNA.
Well, I know that Jeff's contract, I don't think, is up until February, and I don't even know about Matt. I mean, do you want to see a broken Matt Hardy on Raw and SmackDown?
I think it would be amazing. I don't know that Vince would let him do that character. I could just picture Vince now saying, I don't get it.
Dude, how about broken Matt Hardy against the Wyatts like they've been feuding on Twitter, and you put that on SmackDown and just let him play it out?
It'd be fantastic. It'd be tremendous, but I don't know. Who do you want to see show up?
I mean, I would love to see those guys. I mean, I would like to see Drew Galloway come back at some point, but I think Drew is really enjoying what he's doing right now. Shelton Benjamin's name has been thrown out there, and just from the standpoint of work rate and some of the guys that they have there right now, I would enjoy seeing Shelton back.
I love Shelton as a worker.
Yeah.
You know, definitely not a difference maker, though, in any.
Right, we're right. Just from a selfish standpoint of a really good worker to fill a spot. You know what? Talking about Matt Hardy, let me ask you this, too, okay? From a standpoint of somebody that was on the creative team there. So, TNA, Matt Hardy, they do the whole broken Matt Hardy final deletion angle. Gets a lot of buzz. whether you liked it or not, but it got a lot of attention. A week later, WWE did the fight between the New Day and the Wyatts at the Compound, which was similar but yet different. It was a little bit of a more polished, kind of a horror story-esque version of the Final Deletion. Was there ever a time when you worked there that you or somebody else saw ideas from other promotions and said, maybe we need to capitalize on this or go that route? Is that common?
No, never once. And I can say that unequivocally. In fact, I wrote about this on KevinEckWrestling.sportsblog.com.
Dang right. The Eck Factor blog.
The Eck Factor, yeah. Or you can just Google Kevin Eck blog.
Or you can find him on Twitter. It's KevinEck_WWE.
That's right. I wrote about this not too long ago that, you know, I saw a lot of... And look, I get it. You know, obviously when you watch what I call the Wyatt Compound Massacre, it's so, you know, cinematic. And obviously the first thing you think of is, well, TNA just did the Final Deletion. That seems very similar. But I can tell you, when I was there, there was never a time... Well, first of all, let me go back. Not many people watched, and this is the honest truth. When I was on the creative team, very few people watched TNA on the team. And those who did weren't really regular watchers. I can tell you at that time, I was so immersed in WWE that, you know, I saw TNA maybe every couple of months. I mean, there would be... If I got, you know, interested in something, I might watch a few weeks in a row. But for the most part, I wasn't a regular viewer. So we didn't really even know what was going on. And I can 100% guarantee you Vince had no clue what was going on TNA. But there were a couple instances where, independently of what was going on TNA, there would be an idea pitched that may have been something similar. And one of the example I gave in the blog that I wrote was when Kane was sort of having his identity, you know, we pitched an identity crisis when he first became corporate king and was part of the Authority, and the mask had been put in a box. The idea there was that at some point the Authority would need to bring the monster back, and he would be. But we made it clear that he was never going to go back and forth. He was going to be corporate Kane. Or somewhere down the line, he'd be Demon Kane. One of the writers had the idea of almost making him like a supervillain, where he's corporate Kane, then he changes into Demon Kane, and the next week he could go back and forth, like a secret identity, but everybody knows who it is. And someone brought up, well, that's sort of similar to something TNA is doing with Abyss and Joseph Park. And you know, the rest of us, you know, a lot of us, well, I was aware of it, but most people were like, well, we don't even know what that is. And the head writers, the theory always was, like, nobody really, like, we're not copying TNA. We would never knowingly take an idea that they had and make it a WWE version of it. But if by some chance something that we pitched happens to resemble in any way something that they're doing, it's not a reason to not do it, because someone might say, oh, you ripped off TNA. Our thought always was, so what? We know we didn't rip it off. We're not going to not do something we think's good just because whatever the number of people who watch both shows are will say, oh, they stole this idea. So I can tell you, never once. You know, I remember when we introduced the Shield, I think the Aces and Eights thing was going on at the time, and there was some discussion in the IWC, like, that was our version of Aces and Eights. And, again, nothing could have been further from the truth. You know, we wanted a security – we wanted CM Punk to have some henchmen. And we came up with the idea of like, security, you know, guys dressed in the Kevlar and all that. And, you know, there were three studs at NXT that we wanted to bring up. And that was that. Like, there was never any thought of, oh, this is our Aces and Eights. So, you know, my belief is the Final Deletion and the Wyatt Compound Massacre are a coincidence. Am I 100% – can I say that with 100% certainty? No. I haven't been in the writer's room for 2 years, so I don't know. But I just can't imagine any WWE writer would have said, hey, man, that was a great idea. Let's steal it, and let's do our version of it, but with the Wyatts. I can't imagine that discussion taking place, because I never heard anything like that in the 3 years that I was there.
I tend to kind of think that it did happen similar to that. I think because it was so wild and crazy and people were talking about it so much, and it was getting reaction from some of the talent in WWE, even online, on social media. I think the guys saw it. It got passed around. Everybody was having fun with it. And I think somebody said, why don't we do something like this to creative? Maybe some creative people then saw it. And then I think it might have gotten pitched to Vince. And Vince is just oblivious to it because he's so busy. He's not watching any other promotion. He's not aware of what other promotions are doing, even through social media. And he has said, I like the idea. It's different. It's unique. Let's do it.
Well, like I said, I can't say with certainty that it didn't happen that way. Yeah. I'm still skeptical that it did. And I can't imagine that once it got pitched that someone wouldn't have smartened Vince up and said, you know what, this is very close. And again, maybe it was like what I said earlier. He would have said, well, who cares?
Exactly. And that's what I think, too, because they'll look at it from a standpoint of, okay, so TNA gets their 300,000, 400,000 people that watch their television show. And I don't know how many people watch this video online. But he'll sit there and go, well, we've got Raw, and we've got, you know, 3.5 to 4 million people watching. And then we'll get however many clicks on our YouTube channel off of that video. You know, we'll get another 300, 400,000 there. So, you know, whatever, you know, we do our thing, you know, and they can also say, you know what, it was different because it wasn't like anything shot for shot. It wasn't as cheesy. It wasn't as campy. It was a lot more serious. And like I said, it was kind of a horror-esque thing. So they can sit there and say it was something different, whether it really was or not. I don't know. It's just quite the coincidence that it happened. One happened immediately after the other. And maybe that's all it is a coincidence.
Again, that's what I think. I really do think it was. The timing is very curious. So I know the first reaction would be to say, they did it because of TNA. But sometimes there are just coincidences. And it's not like they haven't done, cinematic type thing. Not to this extent, but the Wyatt family, you know, with the earlier vignettes and some of the other things we've done, this wasn't too far. Like, if you didn't see the final deletion, I don't think you would have said this was anything that out there for WWE to do as far as the Wyatt family goes. They've even done some stuff on their website with the stuff that never aired on TV. There's some stuff with the Wyatts,
mm-hmm.
Him talking about the history of Sister Abigail. I don't know if you ever saw that, but it's not like it would, the Wyatts have never done, you know, horror film-esque type vignettes. So that's why, again, I tend to believe that it just made sense that you have, you know, 2-3-man groups here, and they were going to meet on the Wyatts turf, and that's what they did. I mean, ultimately, it probably benefited TNA more than it did WWE, right? Because most fans just said, WWE stole their idea. And plus, when you put them side by side, it's all subjective, but I think most people thought the final deletion was better.
Totally.
And it probably made more people aware of the final deletion that had never even heard of it and probably checked it out.
I know they had the brand split coming up with the draft, but you know what? It didn't make sense the way they did from the standpoint that those teams had not had a match yet. Why not let them have a match first, and then as they take it to the next level, then do a compound fight like on the pay-per-view?
Yeah, I could see that point too. I could see something like that happening.
I mean, I'm not saying it has to be live. You can just tape the damn thing and just pop it into the pay-per-view.
Yeah, maybe it could be as great as that graveyard match that Vampiro and the Demons had back when I worked at WCW back in like.
What about the junkyard match where people got legitimately hurt?
Oh my God! Yeah, was it Fit Finley and somebody?
Hack
Regal.
Hack, Sandman.
Hack. Yeah.
Yeah. That was a train wreck. Let's talk about...
Like to believe that this was an original idea. I think it's pretty lame. Anybody that steals anybody's ideas, I think it's pretty lame. And I think just the fact that you would steal it, you know, so late, like 1 week later. That's the other thing. We don't know. You know, things are planned in advance. Like, we don't know how... I don't know when the two videos were shot. I don't know when that Wyatt thing was shot. So... it could have been in the works and dreamed up and talked about before the final deletion ever even made it to air.
Right.
I'm saying that's a possibility.
Let's talk about one other thing here. So, MCW Pro Wrestling, you guys just had the Shamrock Cup.
Yep.
How'd the event go?
It was great. Sting was there. Lex Luger was there. It was almost surreal to see Sting, you know, especially like walking out to the ring at the MCW Arena. I got to give Dan McDevitt, the promoter, you know, not that I'm kissing his ass, I gave him a lot of credit, you know. In the past year or so, he's brought in Ric Flair, Shawn Michaels, Sting. I mean, it's pretty amazing.
Did you blare his old music, A Man Called Sting?
I wish. You know, we played the that horrible WWE theme.
Oh, yeah. Man Called Sting, man. You got to go with the cheese there, man. It's great.
Hey, I'm partial to the Metallica Seek and Destroy.
Oh, well, me too. But, I mean, if you really want to get a... Yeah, I mean, the other one says Sting on it, so come on.
Yeah. But, yeah, it was great. Highlight of the show. Most people would probably say Leo Rush winning the Shamrock Cup, becoming the first back-to-back winner. I would say it was the big title change, the Ektourage, Eric Chappell, and Dirty Money becoming the three-time MCW Pro Tag Team Champions.
Mm. They have not updated that on the website yet.
Oh, you know, it's MCW management, you know, they hate us because we're so good. And, you know, so I get it. You know, they cannot update it, but that doesn't mean it isn't true.
Well, you need to get on them about that then. from everything that I saw, it looked like it was a great event. And MCW Pro Wrestling always does fantastic stuff. Next shows are coming up Friday, September 23rd. Ringside, an evening with Jim Ross and Jim Cornette.
How great is that going to be?
Oh, my goodness. There's going to be some stories there.
Oh, my God.
Well, it was funny because, in Dallas, the night before WrestleMania, I think it was the night before, it was after Raw, the day after WrestleMania, Jim Ross did one of his shows, and Jim Cornette was a special guest, and I was just off the side of the stage, like, watching it, and the stories and everything going on there was pretty incredible. So that should be awesome. And then what is it? Saturday, September 24th, you've got a tribute to the legends hosted by Bill Apter. And there's a lot of people that are going to be there for that. And then you've got some other events coming up on Saturday, October the 1st, and then Friday, November the 11th.
Yeah. People can find all about, all those events. MarylandWrestling.com.
MCWProWrestling.com as well.
They just changed the name from Maryland Championship Wrestling. MCW doesn't stand for anything anymore. Apparently.
Right.
It used to be Maryland Championship Wrestling. Now we're not trying to seem so regional, so now it's MCW Pro Wrestling.
By the way, the tribute to the legends on Saturday, September 24th, the names, so Bret Hart, Jimmy Hart, Howard Finkel, Honky Tonk Man, Jim Ross, Paul Orndorff, the people that I know you're most excited about, Dennis Stamp will be there, and the Shockmaster.
He's booked.
Shockmaster
Dennis Stamp is booked.
Yep, I love it. I love that it says, Beyond the Mat Star, I'm not booked, Dennis Stamp.
Yeah, it should be a good time. And they're constantly adding names, too. Hornswoggle's going to be there now, and I can't even remember who else. But, yeah, it's
I would say you guys should go get Heath Slater now that he's apparently a free agent, and he's been talking with Evolve. I love that story.
That's pretty good. Pretty good angle for Heath.
Great angle for Heath. It's perfect,
yep.
Man. I love it.
It is.
Everybody can go online. They can read the Eck Factor. It's at kevineckwrestling.sportsblog.com, and you can follow Kevin on Twitter. It's at @KevinEck_WWE. So always enjoy the conversation, Kevin. Keep up the great work, and we'll do it again soon.
Sounds good.
The talking is over.
Thanks for downloading Between the Ropes.
Now you guys are awesome. Thank you.
For more, go to BetweenTheRopes.com and subscribe to Between the Ropes on iTunes.
Thank you. Have a nice day.